Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. First of all, I'd like to say that, yay, my cast is off, and I can slowly start planning when I'm going to be going back to Ukraine again. The problem is that, well, it turns out that if you don't use a joint for 6 weeks, that it atrophies and kind of gets swollen and then becomes painful. So I'm dealing with that. In the meantime, by the way, I was interviewed by History Impossible podcast, so go check that one out. We had a very long conversation, and I hope it was interesting. And, you know, we went on a lot of tangents, but still, that was pretty neat. And today, I have some interesting news for you, and some, well, Russian news. Because those are a bit strange there. We'll definitely be mentioning the Russian, well, St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Because, oh boy, that was kind of crazy. But to start off, let's get done with what's happening there. First of all, Kharkiv front. Oh yeah, and this comes from Arestovych, from the Ukrainian side, because Igor Girkin has been, well, lately kind of less active on publishing his own kind of stuff about the front, but, you know, I can't really delay episodes so much just to wait for my favorite nemesis. I think he's actually trying to hurt me now. So this comes from Ukrainian military politician and ex-advisor to Zelensky, Andrei Arestovych, and his interviews with a blogger and a political analyst, Mark Fagan. So here's what he says. In Kharkiv, Russia is still pressuring in the north, and apparently they've moved a bit closer and maybe will shell the city again. In Izium, Russia's attempts to move on Bardivko and Dolny have been pushed back, and in general, Izium is holding. Ukraine is advancing from the west to relieve pressure on Slavyansk, which you know, is still under threat, and they're not aiming to cut it off yet. Lyman. Russia is trying to find options to cross the river Siversky Donets, and they want to do it in two directions simultaneously, Raihorodok and Siversk, but they're not very successful. Severodonetsk. Street battles continue. It's a positional war. Russia attacks on Borivsky. Situation is really hard but controllable. Ukrainian side also takes a lot of losses, which is sad, but again, like many analysts have stated, at this point, this is kind of the moment after which we can see some actual breakthroughs in the war, and sadly on both sides. If Ukraine holds, then they can do better counterattacks. I do believe they will succeed, but these days will be very tense, and the losses will just increase over time, sadly. Popasnya. A lot of activity in the north again. Attempts to cut off Bakhmut-Lyshansk highway, the one which, well, Girkin told us about like a couple weeks ago that Russia must take, but still unsuccessfully. Komishuvaha. This has changed control already 3 times. This is near Popasnya. And, you know, any announcement doesn't mean much. This control changes the next day, and that's just one of those little side villages that just shifts over all the time. Everywhere else, practically no changes. Russia's tactical objectives are, thus, to cross river Siversky Donets in multiple locations, capture Siversk, and cut off the road Bakhmut-Lyshansk and surround Lyshansk-Severodonetsk to advance on Slavyansk. So far, no significant changes in progress in the east flank in general. Russians are unable to complete their objectives effectively, and, well, in any predictable timescale. Meanwhile, in the south, Ukraine, in Kherson, Ukraine has gained permanent foothold on the east coast of Inhulets River after joining from multiple river crossings, showing ability to move despite enemy having advantages. Russia tried to counterattack, Ukrainian counterattack, and was repelled, but again, the maneuvers are slowing down, and we're moving into positional war, and to carry on and to proceed, Ukraine really needs more heavy artillery and heavy weaponry. Poland recently has provided 260 tanks. Ukraine would wish for double that. 500 against 1,000 tanks of Russia would be quite adequate. Ukraine is also super happy about United States' additional assistance. Basically, United States has sent 18 155mm howitzers, plus 18 trucks, 36,000 rounds, additional missiles for HIMARS, 4 tactical recovery vehicles, tons of spare parts and other equipment, 2 Harpoon anti-ship missile systems, 1,000 secure radios, and 1,000 night vision, thermal, and other optical devices. Which, well, I personally find quite great. Basically, the help is coming, and that's pretty great. 155mm howitzers, assuming Canada, Poland, and Netherlands send about 18 more, which would make a total of 36, would help to cover one direction of the whole battle and gain local advantages. Amounts pledged are less than desired, deliveries are possibly coming only in August, which puts possible Ukrainian offensive as at least 2 to 3 months away. Apparently, according to Arestovich, United States is planning to provide 350 Bradley IFVs to Greece and 89 to Croatia. If Ukraine would get half of that, changes would be significant, but these deliveries are meant so that Greece and Croatia would send their own vehicles to Ukraine, which also, of course, would help. Russia is decreasing natural gas supplies to Europe, expecting that energetic, food, and refugee crisis would achieve similar effects as nuclear weapons usage. After failing their blitzkrieg, Russia is now preparing for a long attrition war in a position similar to Iran. They're expecting weakness of the West. And their goal is not to win Ukraine, but for the West to start pushing for some sort of a Minsk III-style agreement. Basically, this is kind of interesting because, yeah, seems like Putin's willingness to also continue the war is closing down. And this is kind of explainable since, well, he has a lot of other issues. Also, as we got some reports, Ukrainian General Dmytro Marchenko states that destroying the newly built Kerch Bridge from the occupied Crimea to Russian mainland is one of Kyiv's top priorities as it would complicate Moscow's ability to send reserve troops through Crimea. The bridge will be a, quote, target number one, end quote, for the military once Ukraine gets the necessary weapons, he told journalists on Wednesday. Russian President Putin awarded valor medals to soldiers in the same tank regiment that an independent journalist investigation implicated in war crimes committed against civilians outside Kyiv in Bohodivka. Which is, yeah, as expected, I mean, who else would he celebrate after all? Russia's central bank has urged credit organizations to withhold dividend payments and bonuses from senior executives in order to ensure financial stability during the Russian economy's, as they call it, structural transformation. And also, a new study by RBC.ru found out that Russia will have some troubles rebuilding since the production of half of Russia's construction materials, including bricks, tiles, porcelain, and, well, everything, basically, is almost entirely dependent on equipment imported from the West. This isn't really surprising because, well, not like they have been super independent before. Russia, after all, is an extremely import-dependent country. Despite their energetical exports, they are dependent on imported goods. Which is pretty interesting since, well, like I said, I always mention that Russia is basically a colonial state in a way. They treat their own regions as a colonial empire. And in the way, yeah, and at one point, you know, John McCain was quite right. They are a mafia-run gas station that tries to portray themselves as a country. But, you know, which is quite interesting. Now, what really happened inside Russia about all the sanctions and everything is they had an economical forum in St. Petersburg. This forum is like nothing new. They happen every year. Except, well, it's called the International Forum of Economics in Petersburg. And this year, you know, because of the sanctions and the war and everything that's going on, a lot of leaders and a lot of businesses really, you know, canceled out their kind of reserved spots, and they didn't want to go. And what's interesting is that, well, I thought that after reading the messages that those few people who actually will attend the forum, well, they have been granted the permission to not to be known publicly by where they work and what they represent, and there's just not that many international people. They barely can call it international forum anyways. But this forum has produced a lot of niceness because, well, one of my economical analysts, who's very, very anti-war and very, very anti-Putin, Dmitry Potapenko, he's been on the show a long time ago, by the way, He visited the forum, and he stated that it's practically impossible to go anywhere because you still have to have these PRC tests there, and you can't even get in, and the security is horrible, and Putin hasn't even appeared there himself. But as far as we know, yeah, this forum is truly international. Because what a surprise. One of the most interesting guests that came this year, and who were specifically invited, and they got to basically do a lot of deal-making, and they held their own presentation, and talked about how they'll cooperate with Russia, were none other than honorable guests of Lavrov, which basically we spoke about it in previous episodes, Taliban, no less. Yes, Taliban, the very same terrorist organization running Afghanistan. And it's kind of funny, since even inside of Russia, they still are considered terrorists. Officially, they are called terrorists. But that doesn't really matter to anyone, I suppose, because they just invite them to international talks, because, well, no one else will talk to them. Which kind of says a lot about Russia, because if you think about it, you know, you can really tell something by a country when you're really the only people that you can get for your economical forum are, well, Taliban out of everyone. At the same time, this wasn't the only interesting news about this forum. They also, in a closed meeting, presented a map where it was shown how exactly Russia plans to incorporate Ukraine in Russia, and how they are going to split it, and what they're going to take, and what they're going to leave. Now, I haven't seen this map, because this comes from reports who saw it from people who went on the forum, and this has been said by a lot of people, you know, both pro-Russian and anti-Russian, anti-war people from Russia. And this was quite shocking, because it shows not only the Donetsk and Luhansk republics, this shows all of Ukraine, and they're super optimistic, and apparently this map was made already before the war started, which is quite interesting, since in this hard and difficult tactical situation where they're in, and they don't have mobilization, and we'll mention that afterwards as well, yeah, they're still going by the plan and trying to basically make up something so that Putin would feel good, I suppose. I bet at one point they'll start printing, you know, special newspapers for Putin as well. And the third, because this economical forum just keeps on giving, the third news about this was that apparently in the sphere of new technological innovations, and I posted a picture about this on my Twitter, which you should follow, @Eastern_border, because we're trying to reach our 20,000 followers. Well, they apparently presented a new robotic saleswoman. Well, mostly a waitress / saleswoman / bartender person, created by Russian engineers and presenting the newest and best and the greatest of Russian engineering. Now, the problem was that this robot, if you can even call it that way, because I believe it was kind of moving around, it was inefficient. It could basically only twist its torso, and it could really do anything much except recommend you things by, you know, obviously pre-voiced lines. It looked like a massive failure. But the fun fact was that some people inside Russia actually looked it up and found out that apparently this robot cost the taxpayers about $200,000. But what happened was that they literally took a sex doll, added in a device that basically plays records, an MP3 player, and put some motors in there so that it would turn around and would look like something super sophisticated. This reminds me of that drone video that I posted about how $100,000 worth of drones have literal plastic bottles as their gasoline tanks, and with like Canon cameras, the cheapest ones in the market, slapped in there. Because yeah, this was something of truly, truly amazing. But besides that, we also have had some sad news as well. These are the ones that I will really investigate further on, because yeah, they're a bit serious. See, according to a representative from a Chechen human rights organization, Wayfund, it is impossible for Chechens to refuse to go to war. Reminder that Chechen is the place where Ramzan Kadyrov reigns supreme when he collects extra taxes, And in general, you know, puts gay people in concentration camps. And also, you know, he has 99.99% people voting for Putin all the time because he kidnaps people, tortures them, and, you know, does terrible things. And in this region, people are obeying because they believe it's better to die from a bullet wound in Ukraine than from torture at home. Security officials, according to my reports, are using more exotic and traumatizing methods of coercion as well. Quote, "It's scary when they violate the honor of a man or his wife, sister, or daughter. Security officials come to people's houses, start harassing the woman and dressing them. For our Chechen traditional mentality, that is the worst that can happen. It's better to die than to be humiliated that way. After that, you'll no longer be considered a man." And we're looking at a very tribal, traditional society. They're all Muslims, and they live in these tapes, and I've talked about the society of Chechnya in my previous episodes, but, yeah. Apparently now you have to get tortured for all this to happen. In the meantime, Putin still continues to be afraid of Navalny. Remember that guy? Yeah, he's sitting in prison, and he won't come out of prison as long as Putin stays into power. But Putin is so afraid of him that despite poisoning him and despite that he's in one of the weirdest prisons out there, he has now been transferred to a maximum security prison in the village of Melyukhovo in the Vladimir region. Regional Public Monitoring Commission Chairman Sergei Yazhan reported the news to RIA Novosti on Tuesday. Quote, "Navalny has arrived at the IK6, the prison in Melyukhovo. He's arrived and is there now." Earlier, on June 14th, associates of Navalny reported that he had been transferred out of Correctional Colony No. 2 in Pokrov, but that his new location was unknown. And this prison basically is a prison inside a prison, since, well, if you look at the amount of deaths from torture by administration or various so-called accidents, yeah, this prison is in top spot, and I think, you know, Navalny might actually suffer quite a bit more. Navalny himself, in early May, reported that he might be taken to this prison. Quote, "My sentence," his second sentence where he got 9 more years in prison, "hasn't come into effect yet, but inmates of the maximum security prison have reported that a prison within the prison is being prepared for me," said Navalny. He didn't specify what they meant by this sentence, but, you know, knowing where he's being transferred to, yeah, that fits the bill. But this was the news for today, and I hope that Girkin comes up with something interesting, because I'm pretty tired when, you know, he right now goes on a lot of interviews and presents his view everywhere. But, you know, if you've been reading him on Telegram and you've been following everything that he says, yeah, sadly, nothing new going on. I presume that that's because really we're looking at this border moment of this whole war, and there might be a breaking point, and maybe Girkin doesn't want to reveal something that, you know, Western secret agents could pick up. But I'm getting some reports, and they'll be combined in a future episode. In the meantime, please consider supporting our show on Patreon at patreon.com/theeasternborder. You can also get there if you go to our webpage, theeasternborder.lv, and, you know, there's a link to our Patreon there. There's also a link for one-time donations through PayPal, which we're also super thankful about, because, you know, we're going to be moving back to Ukraine to get closer to everything that's happening there, and because I can't really stay away from there for prolonged periods of time, and we're going to try our best. Oh, and also, if you listen straight from our webpage, then you, of course, listen to the show without any advertisements. Of course, please follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. I think Twitter is better because I focus my attention there a bit more since I get banned from Facebook on a regular basis. But all in all, you know, situation, thankfully, isn't simple, but it also doesn't look as bleak as it was 3 months ago. And that's it for today. До свидания, товарищи. And remember, happiness is mandatory.